Power 98.7 podcast.
Well, indeed, the conversation continues. Guys, these are conversations that build a nation. Of course, we might have different viewpoints, but at the end of the day, we have an opportunity to reflect on issues because this is our country and we have to make meaningful contribution in making sure that we transform it from good to great. Dumiso Hadebe, good morning to you. Welcome to Power.
Good morning, my good friend. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you? Dumiso, it's been a while, eh?
No, indeed it has. I'm very well. Thank you. And thank you so much for having me once again.
Yeah, maybe before we get into the nuts and balls of our conversation, our economy is still struggling, man. And I know that the governing party tried things like a stimulus package. We have convened the investment summit. We have convened the job summit. But that needle is not ticking, you know, from an economic perspective. Aren't we doing something creative that can help us to come out of these dire straits?
Sure. So I think for quite some time, our economy had been ailing in a number of areas, whether it's with regards to creating additional jobs, or the investment that or foreign investment that is attracted into our local economy, that would stimulate the creation of new industries and so on. And so the recent efforts by the state, as you quite rightly mentioned, with regards to the investment conference, the job summit that was also hosted, the lobbying and advocacy work that is being done within the international community with the investment envoys, that work will be a culmination, or the results of that work, in my view, will be realized in the medium term. So between now and in 4 years' time, that's when we'll see the true result of those efforts. Because certainly when we look at the investments that have already been pledged and that have already been committed to projects that are already shovel ready, and the presidency says that there are 20 projects that are already shovel ready in the area of around 50 billion rand, that work is already starting today. And so we'll only be able to see the result of those projects or the jobs that have been created as a result of those projects after a year, 2 or 3 years' time. So to turn around the ship, it will take some time to be able to see the result and the outcomes of some of the efforts that have already been made. And of course, when we assess economic performance or economic indicators, we should also remember that the numbers that we look at are lagging in effect. So most of the time, the numbers that we look at are retrospective. So we're always looking at what has transpired in the past. So again, the efforts that have been undertaken currently, these are efforts that we only see the true results of in the medium term.
Yeah, indeed. My special guest now, Dumiso Hadebe, the independent economist. So, Dumiso, part of the reason why we speak to you so early in the morning, I mean, it's 14 minutes after one, you know? Some people are sleeping. We are waking. And the economy is going, so which is fantastic. Hospitals, some people are doing night shift, or it's an early morning shift in hospitals, police stations, you know, laboratories, you know, libraries, and so on and so forth. But now, you know, the National Planning Commissioners, when they were crafting the National Development Plan, one of the issues that they raised was the fact that as South Africans, we are obsessed with sloganeering and also obsessed with the strategies and putting together documents. But when coming to implementation and execution, we don't deliver. Here's something that is very interesting, because on this program, we kept on speaking about the importance of a 24-hour economy. And it was interesting that during the job summit, I think it was the second day, the President of the Republic, President Cyril Ramaphosa, announced that, you know, there must be a drive to push the 24-hour economy, you know, as part of a strategy to stimulate growth. So I'm just saying, if you can be approached by the presidency and say, Dumiso Hadebe, you are an independent economist and we want to drive this 24-hour economy, where should we focus on? I know we're going to talk about the decent standard of living, but I'm just, you know, particularly curious because the president pronounced that we have to come up with this drive of a 24-hour economy. Where should we start? How should we focus?
I think there are a number of areas that that we can start by looking at. And the first two that come to mind is with regards to, number one, tourism, and secondly, this whole concept around the fourth industrial revolution. One, tourism is important simply because it requires the minimum amount of effort to be able to create additional labor demand in that sector. And all it requires is organization on the part of actors in the tourism sector and marketing, simply. And of course, South Africa is already an attractive travel destination to foreigners who want to visit the country. Tourism is, say, beginning of 2018, they had a whole drive before they went to the World Economic Forum in Davos to say, look, we want to market the whole of South Africa's offering, not just the three or four provinces that are known for certain sites, but to deliver the whole experience of what each and every single province in South Africa has to offer, so as to optimize some of the historical uniqueness of certain regions in South Africa, and also different offerings. So that's one of the areas in which we could be able to stimulate additional economic growth with the whole, this whole concept around having a 24-hour economy. Secondly, as well, I think with the large number of young people who are unemployed, with young people who are also orientated towards technology as well, and this whole drive to reduce data costs. From March 2019, Minister Mboweni mentioned that they would start the auctioning of broadband spectrum around the country to ensure that they decrease that it's, to ensure that it decreases the price of data. That's quite important because it then it therefore provides an opportunity for people who are inclined towards technology to start innovating around products and services that would be able to respond to the convenience that consumers need, whether it be during the day or at night. And that kind of creativity or those kinds of efforts would play a significant role in, firstly, turning around the South African economy, number two, broadening empowerment and participation in the South African economy, and thirdly, for young people who might be even up at this time or people who might be up at this time and have an orientation towards technology, to start innovating around asking themselves questions around how they could better enhance the lives of people by offering a product or a service that would add value in their lives, even after hours or during in the AMs, for example. So I think those are two areas in which we could play a huge role in leveraging, not only in South Africa, but across the continent of Africa, given the nature of our underdevelopment.
Indeed. My special guest, the independent economist Ndumiso Hadebe. Yeah, we are touching very interesting issues. But guys, if you're standing, I want you to sit down because I don't want you to idibala here. Because I'm going to read something, you know, before we do the idibala so early in the morning, you might not get a chance to be attended to. This is the crux of my discussion with Ndumiso Hadebe. And of course, we'll also invite you to join the conversation on 0861-987-000 because the issue of economy, guys, it affects you and I. It affects everybody. Here's an opening statement. I'm going to read it very slowly. The decent standard of living statistics have come out stating that only 3% of South Africans can afford a decent life. Only 3% of South Africans can afford a decent life. And here's another perspective. Social security experts have cautioned that as long as South Africa focuses primarily on reducing poverty instead of inequality, the country will continue to carry the dubious honor of being the most unequal society on earth. Ndumiso, these are terrifying statistics. How do we deal with this issue? We can't even afford a decent life. Only 3%. And I think it does emphasize the point that we are the most unequal society in the world. But you see, it frustrates me because this thing, I've been hearing it for the past 15 years or so, you know? What is going on? How do we turn this around?
This specific conundrum is always one that all of us as South Africans continue to struggle with.
Yes.
But I think there are also a number of perspectives that we need to drop into this specific conversation as we assess or try to diagnose the situation. So there's a blessing and a curse in this specific situation, specifically with regards to South Africa being one of the most, or if not the most, unequal society in the world. One of the reasons is that South Africa's capability and capacity to mine data and research and analyze the economic performance of South Africa's economy and the status of South Africa's society is quite advanced. The statistics is quite advanced in that regard. So in some instances, you might find that South Africa is not necessarily the most unequal society in the world simply because another country does not have the kind of capacity or capability to be able to conduct research and mine data the way statistics does. For example, a month ago, Nigeria mentioned that it's unable to release its unemployment data because their data institution or research institution is not capitalized enough to be able to undertake that work. So specifically in the continent of Africa, you find a number of institutions that are important for conducting research and mining data in terms of economic performance and the status of society, unable to do that due to a wide range of inefficiencies. So it's a blessing on our side to say we have that capacity to be able to do that, and so we're able to get accurate numbers to say what is the status of the nation, really, compared to other states. So you might find that if other nations on the continent had the same capacity, that South Africa might not necessarily be the most unequal society in the world. A friend of mine who's from Angola, we were actually having this specific conversation, and he was to say, "Hey, Mon, in Angola, we don't do research. We don't have capacity to conduct surveys and find out who's unemployed, who's not. We don't have that capacity." Yeah. So you find that specific perspective that may exist. Yeah. On the other side, you also find the reality that 3% of South Africans are able to have a decent life.
Mm.
You find that 55% of South Africans live under 1,000 rand per month.
Per month, yeah.
You find an instance where only 16% of South Africans have access to medical aid.
Yeah.
And of course, the other numbers that we already know around the unemployment numbers and the high levels of inequality in South Africa. And that becomes truly problematic.
Yeah.
And then you've also mentioned the two contending issues around with regards to poverty and inequality.
Mm.
And one of the ways to address poverty is to create a conducive environment that enables the creation of labor-intensive sectors, and as a result, that would create additional labor demand. So when we reference a document that was put together by the World Bank when they were looking at what are some of the sectors that are most responsive to creating additional jobs when there are tax incentives to those sectors, when government employs tax incentives, or there's private investment into those sectors, which sectors create additional labor demand? That report, according to their calculations, they found that sectors such as, tourism, agriculture, trade, the SMME sector, amongst others, are some of the most responsive sectors wherever there are tax incentives involved or whether there's additional investment involved. And that's a priority for South Africa. I think that's the first step to say, how do we ensure that when we are driving investment to stimulate economic growth, how do we direct that investment specifically to sectors that will ensure that it has a ripple effect in creating additional jobs? Then secondly, and this therefore involves labor unions and labor specifically, to say once people have jobs, once Ndumiso, who is a young person and was unemployed for quite some time, now earns, just last week, the bill around with regards to the minimum wage was announced by the presidency and will be in effect as of 2019. Mm. Now that Ndumiso earns 20 rand an hour or under 20 rand an hour, but he's employed, he's able to move around. How do we ensure that Ndumiso earns the minimum wage or even better, a decent living wage to be able to sustain himself and his family? So I think those are the two priorities. We first need to create the jobs. Then secondly, ensure that people are remunerated at a level that is quite, that is decent enough for them to be able to sustain their, themselves and their livelihood as well. And also create additional jobs, because quite truly in the economic system that we operate in, the only source of revenue that governments have is through taxes.
Exactly.
And so whenever people have additional jobs, then governments are able to tax more, and as a result, they're able to have more money in their coffers to be able to finance development of road networks, clinics, education, and so on and so forth. And so I think we need to look at this specific question through those specific lenses.
Interesting conversation indeed. Guys, we signed a social pact that we're going to drive this concept of 24-hour economy. Now we are talking economics now. We're talking the economy specifically. So I want to mobilize the power listeners to engage Ndumiso Hadebe on this important subject, because, like I said, it affects us on a daily basis. And the fact that our economy is stagnant, and you could even see the rating agencies from time to time that are looking at us and say, what are you doing, guys, creatively to extricate yourselves from this economic quagmire? So let's get the conversation going. Give us a call, 0861-987-000. And let's discuss about what needs to be done, because we are confronted by these realities of poverty, the inequality. And it's very interesting, because when you look at the political parties, for instance, we are going to the elections next year, 2019. I will be particularly interested in the manifestos. And what you see happening, for instance, you have the ANC that are crisscrossing the country and they're saying they're collecting information from South Africans in terms of what needs to be in their manifesto, which is going to be announced next year, I think maybe during the January 8th or so. And we've got parties like the EFF. Other parties, we don't hear much. You know, you hear the EFF, they've got what you call the People's Assemblies, you know, where they are getting information in terms of what they want, what people really need. So, Ndumiso, the question for me is that, do we really need to rely on politicians and what they say within the manifestos? Or maybe to put it differently, looking at this statistics of 3% of South Africans who can afford a decent life. I mean, this is shocking by any standards. Should it be our expectations that within the manifestos of different political parties, there must be a deliberate strategy to address this issue of a decent life? Because as we say, only 3% of South Africans, and these are shocking statistics.
Sure. I think given that we are heading to a general election,
yes,
and there's a lot of mass mobilization work that is being done by political parties crisscrossing the country, as you've quite rightly mentioned, a number of issues come up. I saw a a post on social media just last week of a young person who created a T-shirt written on the back, no job, no vote. So these are some of the pertinent issues that have been existing with us for quite some time. And just even today when I was driving in traffic, I saw quite a number of young people who were at the back of a van. And you would see that they had just come from either a construction site or they were from a garden service. Mm. And in my mind, this it depicted the picture of what South Africa and what the continent of Africa looks like, where you have this huge amount of energy that is readily available to make a contribution in the South African and African economy. And yet there isn't a conducive environment to optimize the time, the energy, the enthusiasm, the skills and the innovation and the ingenuity that comes with this population in our context. But I think from where we come from, there have indeed, to really balance out the picture, there have indeed been great strides that have been made from the recent past. So, for instance, if we were to look at the rate of growth from a GDP per capita perspective at an average from 1994 to 2017, there's been a 32% improvement in that. When you look at the black employees in the workforce, that has grown three times than what it was before. When we look at formal housing as well, it improved from 17% to around 300%. And so there are a number of areas in which, when we compare to the dawn of democracy to where we are, there have been significant improvements, specifically with the dawn of democracy and the capability to be able to broaden participation and development for South Africans who had been previously disadvantaged.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important during this time to take politicians to task, specifically when it comes to policies that are being proposed and the engagement that is being done at a local government level, and also the broader policy frameworks that political parties propose, and of course that will go into their manifestos. Because a lot of the time, what happens is that there's mobilization on the ground with regards to what we think should happen or what we need on the ground, but the reality is that we already know what South Africans need. We already know that the jobs question is quite crucial. We already know that, unfortunately, we don't have the kind of education system that is able to specifically respond to the labor demand challenges that we have in South Africa today. For example, as we see even today, there are 800,000 jobs that are available in the market.
Yeah.
But the challenge is that is this question around, do we have the requisite skills to be able to fill those jobs?
Yeah.
And the structure of the South African economy is such that it's relatively a modern economy and services based. And when we look at those kinds of when you look at the structure of that kind of economy where it's highly services-based and it's informed by the knowledge economy, and you have a large number of people who are not employed in education or any form of training, they don't have the kind of sophisticated skills to be able to respond to services-based type of jobs that are required in the marketplace.
Okay.
And this can be as a result of not being able to or not having a matric or whatever the case may be. So how do we use young people, but when you look at it from a different perspective of the literacy rate in South Africa, when we compare it to our counterparts in the African continent, our literacy rates in South Africa are north of 90%. So in effect, we have people who are readily available and who can be trained for if you're a foreign investor wants to start up a plant, you have people whom you know that they can read and write, and they can at least count it to 10, and all you can do is just train them for the specific job that they need to do in your specific plant. So this is a great opportunity for people to take to task politicians with regards to their policy frameworks that they're proposing, their manifestos, and what they say they can do for South Africans in the future, because oftentimes we find we vote them into government and then there's a sense of complacence that takes place. I mean, I myself, I'm an individual who's in business. I'm involved in a number of businesses, and in some businesses where we are capital raising, when we, even as skilled as we are, and we knock on specific development finance institutions, you find that from what is being said by politicians in statements to the product offerings or finance offerings at development finance institutions, they don't speak to each other. And even you find the bureaucrats or the officials in these DFIs to say, hey, but you know, politicians, they say this, that, and the other. But to be honest, my brother, we don't have the products that speak to the work that some businesses are doing. And some of the consulting work that I do for some clients who are also capital raising, you find that there's a mismatch. They say, no, but there's a stimulus package. The DFI's budget has been increased by 20% to be able to drive industrialization. You go to such DFIs and they say, but it's not happening yet, or it's not in effect on the ground as yet. And we need to take politicians to task and ask the hard questions.
The hard questions.
And to
stop sluggarding. Let's make things happen. Yeah.
Indeed.
Okay, let's go to Siyabonga in the Reeds. Siyabonga, good morning to you.
My name is Andrew. How are you?
Fine, how are you, my brother?
No, I'm well.
Let you.
Makulukulu.
Ah, mfuyo tunja anda.
Hi, my friend.
Ah, siyabonga, siyabonga, mfuyo.
You know, I'm very concerned with economists in this country. A lot of the time, you guys are not really telling it like it is. You guys are always optimistic, particularly when there is a particular policy that has been driven in the country or that has been proposed. You guys become optimistic about it. You don't really give us an honest opinion about that particular policy, you know. You see, as it is right now, the status that you're talking about is facing serious challenges. It's possible that this month we're not going to get the statistics that we normally get each and every month because of the challenges that they are faced. And I want to tell Ndumiso why I'm actually telling you that you guys are not honest with us. Last year, just before Africa Business Forum, if I'm not mistaken, that was held in Durban, you came here and you spoke broadly about, remember, there was a narrative regarding around the inclusive growth and RET, Radical Economic Transformation, and the Minister Gigaba had just announced his 14-point plan. You were very optimistic and positive about it. And deep down, I think you knew that that was not the path that we needed to take as a country. Because if it was the right path, by now, we would be at least yielding results of those plans or of those interventions. But instead, the economy gets deteriorated more. Things are becoming worse day by day. So I'm appealing to you guys that every time if there's a proposed a policy as far as economy is concerned, let us have your honest view, because your sector is mostly it's people who specialize. It's not Siyabonga who can just be able to be articulate about the economy and coherently, just like you guys, you know. It's people who are very well trained, you know. Right now, we're talking of a fourth industrial revolution. If I may ask, Indonesia, honestly, do you think that fourth industrial revolution will bring positive impact in this country?
Sure.
And maybe, Siyabonga, just to chip in there, that's a very good question. But to segue there, Indonesia, what maybe Siyabonga is saying that, because listening to the State Capture Commission, you heard from National Treasury officials about how they are fixated with managing market perceptions. So I think it goes to the heart of Siyabonga's question to say, as economists, are you also not just painting this optimistic picture, though you know in real terms that, hey, this is not the path, but because you're managing these market perceptions, because you know that if the market can have a negative feel about this specific policy, which is not supported by the locals, the markets might tumble and so on and so forth. I think I'm just adding to what Siyabonga is saying.
No, you're on point, Mbeya.
Okay.
You know, when you
hey, sorry, man, you're paying your school fees this morning. Siyabonga is making you to pay your school fees.
And it's important. And it's important. And he mentioned and speaks to some very important points. And really, I think our responsibility as analysts or as economists, specifically with regards to where we are going or the policy direction of South Africa, the question of around a sober and honest analysis of our policy direction is crucial. And one of the things that need to be taken into consideration is how do you ensure that in the analysis or in the final analysis of South Africa's policy direction, that there is a balanced picture that is being painted. I think there's a political epoch, or there has been a shift in the political epoch in South Africa recently, specifically in 2018. But one of the things that are important with regards to any policy formulation, or whether it be investment, is that good governance is central to all of these things. So in as much as there might be a 14-point plan, and again, I mean, the question around the role of national treasury and economic policy and announcing economic policy is concerned, for me personally, it's an area of concern, because I don't understand where it's like in a business, a finance department really charting the overall strategy of the firm. They are overlapping responsibilities, specifically when you have the Department of Economic Development, as it were. The National Treasury in this instance would be to manage the finances of the country or the purse of the country. And so there are some, I think in recent times, some things that were very confusing to say, but the National Treasury ingenapi when it comes to economic policy, because what they need to do is to ensure that to guide South Africa to say, look, we can afford this, we can't afford this, and economic policy needs to inform further growth to ensure that we increase the purse or the coffers of the country. So there are a number of things that I think, in my view, were done incorrectly in recent times. And then on the question of the fourth industrial revolution, look, one of the clients that I consult for is in the technology sector, and they are at a point, without divulging too much of their IP, essentially what we are assisting them with is they're at a second round of capital raising. Mm-hmm. And we have been exploring and assisting them to explore capital raising in the venture capital sector to get private funding or investment into their business. And also we've also been assisting them with securing funding from development finance institutions. However, given the nature of their intervention, it's a highly commercialized intervention, but it also has a developmental mandate to it. So it speaks to some of the programs that government has, or it enhances some of the existing programs that government has. But again, you find that the understanding or the appreciation of the concept of the fourth industrial revolution and what it can do to better enhance development in South Africa as a whole is still not properly understood. And so you find that because of the lack of understanding of these things by both politicians and officials in government, they are struggling to be able to get that funding from development finance institutions. Whereas in the private sector, for example, they have gained more traction in terms of going to different rounds or stages to presenting and ultimately to getting to a point of getting their second round of funding. So I think there's still a lack of underappreciation of what what the fourth industrial revolution has can potentially come with. For example, there's a South African technology business called Jumo. They recently got $52 million through a capital raising initiative that was led by Goldman Sachs to expand their businesses across Asia. They have a footprint across the continent of Africa as well. Mm-hmm. And essentially what they do is that they use data that we use on our mobile phones, whether you use a smartphone or not, to derive intelligence on the credit loan and finance requirements of individuals who live in underdeveloped areas. So what they're able to do, a lot of the interventions you would find, Bo, Capfin, and all of these other short-term loan financing vehicles, they give those kind of businesses the data that they need to be able to direct their marketing initiatives to areas that are underdeveloped to provide further access to finance to people who are underdeveloped. And of course, people who live in underdeveloped areas don't have a proper track record with regards to their credit. So they use these intelligent ways that comes with the fourth industrial revolution and big data and managing that to create criteria or risk criteria that would be able to ensure that people who come from underprivileged or low-income communities at least have access to capital. Because from where I come from, my people who come from who are in a situation where they are in a context of low income, oftentimes we resort to bomashonisa. And bomashonisa, we know, I can borrow 110 for mashonisa today so that I can be able to get on a taxi to go to work. But mashonisa can decide to say, Yazutin, I'm not in a good mood today. 30% interest on that 100 rand. So those are that's not decency. We were speaking around the question of 3% being able to lead decent lives. That's not a decent life.
Yeah.
And so what the fourth industrial revolution can do is that if we use it for the right things, we can be able to intelligently use it to be able to respond to some of the underdevelopment or the developmental issues that we face in our country as a whole.
Okay.
But I think Siyabonga was quite correct in addressing the importance of honest and sober analysis in terms of our situation.
All right, let me give Siyabonga the final bite before I go to Dumisa in Pretoria. Yes, Siyabonga?
My last bite is that, you know, data metrics is the future, but then when you look at the careers that come with fourth industrial revolution, you find that our institution of higher learning, they don't offer those careers. That's the number one problem. Second problem is that by now, if we embark on the fourth industrial revolution, we should be having at least a mini Silicon Valley somewhere in South Africa, you know? Just a smaller town that we know that this town is just mainly technology,
yeah.
You know?
Mm.
Lastly, your view on this, inflation is on a rise, repo rate is up. What is your take as far as achieving the goals of 2020 National Development Plan.
Siyabonga, thank you very much. I'm just gonna ask Ndumiso just to note that one so that I can go to Dumisani. Siyabonga, thank you very much from the read there. Let's go to Dumisani. Good morning to you. Welcome.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Morning.
It's really a pleasure to hear what the gentleman is articulating there.
Yes, sir.
You know, in our country now, I like the way the gentleman is talking about intelligence. We like to implement things without intelligence gathering over the issue. Like now, I had an opportunity of being almost in every province in this country.
Okay.
Our economy should be categorized in levels because of the different status of poverty level that we have. Like for in case now, the level he's talking at now, it's a sublime level. But if you go deeper in the rural, you'll find that the current status or the concept of the fourth industrial revolution, it's something which sounds Greek or Chinese to them because of at the moment, they're just struggling to make an ends meet. So if we can have intelligence based on our country's economy, looking at it in different categories, especially the poverty line, because of we really don't have equal opportunities in this country. So what he's saying, the gentleman, the intelligence is needed. But how we craft the requirement of that intelligence, that what counts, because of even if we're developing the higher level, we should make the higher, the lower level survive. Thank you, sir.
To be silent, just hold on a second. You know, you have said something pertinent, and I will tell you why. Remember Ntate Padile Hotla?
Yes, sir.
The former statistician general.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
He said something, I think it was on Power Talk with Imani. He said something very, very profound. That's exactly what you're saying. He says, we have these statistics, we've got this data, this important data. But unfortunately, the politicians and the bureaucrats within government, I don't think they are using it effectively to shape policy. Because that is exactly what you're saying, to say, don't just release statistics and say, no, poverty levels is this, unemployment is this, but to say, with these statistics, how do we conquer? That's part of your intelligence gathering, isn't it? So that's
can
what you...
Can I say something to you?
Yeah.
Cheap is talk, and that's what the government, our current government, is selling.
Oh, talk is cheap, eh? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, talk is cheap.
Yeah.
It's what our current government is saying. I grew up in politics. You know, I was concerned about currently this country is debating the issue of qualifications. Guys, we are actually dreaming on the wrong bed. Where on earth can somebody who doesn't have matric be given a position that needs a certain level of a qualification? It's just like somewhere. You get you are employed somewhere. They tell you somebody to a career manager. But the career manager doesn't have matric. But you must manage your career with those. So what I'm saying is, we are just, I don't know if the system is confused or the people under the system are confused. Because now, we're talking right, we're working left. What he's saying, the gentleman, when we talk intelligence, there's no intelligence without education. Like the statistics. The statistics are meant to address or to assist the government in implementing some things. But what we do is what? We'll flash them, tell the people who have 40 jobs, 40 this, 40 that. But at the end of the day, it doesn't serve the purpose, which is poverty alleviation. And really, I should say, the gentleman who's talking now, if he can focus on that strategies of education, but the strategies must focus on the academic level, because, Chief, you take it or not, we need a certain level of education to survive. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Dumisani from Pretoria, Sunnyside. Dumiso Hadebe, my special guest, independent economist. It's gone 6 minutes before the hour two. This is Power Zone. We are together until the hour three. Dumiso, some points that were made by Siyabonga there, the issue of the increased repo rate, you know, which is quite challenging, the inflation issues. How do we deal with those? And then maybe at the end, you can just wrap up in terms of the comment by Dumisani about intelligence gathering. But like I said, that, you know, this is something that the former statistician general has mentioned, that we are not using statistics, you know, progressively.
Hey, Ntate Morio, I think even with Siyabonga's remarks, with regard to the inflation being on the rise and the recent hike by the South African Reserve Bank, again, with the South African Reserve Bank, essentially the governors, they had a split decision. Three of them were of the view that it should be unchanged, and the three of them had the view that we should hike interest rates.
Yeah.
And this is at the back of South Africa being part of one of the 24 emerging economies in the world, where when our this thing works like when our repo rate or our lending rate is low, Essentially, we do not attract foreign capital into South African capital and debt markets. Mm. And then you find a situation where the U.S. Federal Reserve have recently hiked their rates, and they are, before end of the year, they're going to hike it again. What that essentially does is that investors who invest, and most of these investors, they come from the U.S., interestingly enough, is that when they see that, hey, the U.S. Federal Reserve has hiked interest rates, they move their capital to more developed markets and more to more developed to markets that are from developed countries. So it's the same situation with us, but with the mandate of the Reserve Bank, their main mandate is to target inflation to ensure that the cost of goods are not overly expensive, given our current situation of high unemployment and so on and so forth. So we need to ensure that the price of goods is always affordable, and we don't find a situation where inflation is at 1,000,000%, like in, for instance, Venezuela. Argentina is another emerging market that is inflation at 65%. Tina, our target with the Reserve Bank is to ensure that it's within the target band of 3 to 6%. So it's to deal with that particular question, but also attract foreign capital in the South African into the South African marketplace. So it's really a twin challenge that they had to balance with. But in my view, because they had forecast to say that inflation in 2019 and 2020, according to their calculations, that it's set to rise to around 5.5%, almost to 6%, which is the upper end of the target band. In my view, I thought it would, given the current situation, we are in a recession. We're about to enter what is often referred to as the silly season. In my view, I would have preferred that it remains unchanged, and that in the next policy meeting, come early next year, then we see where we're at in terms of inflation once the quarterly or monthly inflation or CPI numbers have come out. But I think the only way to address this question, again, if addressing it through monetary policy is almost as if it's a quick arrangement. Again, we need to address the structural underpinnings of the South African economy.
Yeah.
Unless we address those issues and grow the South African economy and grow it in an inclusive manner to ensure that people are able to get their equitable share from their contribution to the economy, but also expand and broaden participation in the South African economy using the huge number of young people that are unemployed, we will forever try to use monetary policy instruments here and fiscal policy instruments there to do patch up work. But underlying is the structural underpinnings of the South African economy that we need to address. That remains. And I think with what Ntate Dumisani mentioned as well, it's one of my struggles currently, and it's work that it's research and lobbying work that I continue to do with government today to say, how do we use data to be able, and you quite rightly mentioned the former Statistician General mentioned this, to say, but we're not using this data intelligently enough in policy formulation and in systems planning in government.
Yeah.
And for instance, when Ntate Dumisani was talking, South Africa we have high levels of unemployment, high levels of poverty, high levels of inequality, but yet even people who are in the low income bracket have WhatsApp.
Yes.
And if somebody has a WhatsApp, it means that at some point or another, they have access to the internet and to data. And what that enables us to do, and we have all of these telecoms communications in South Africa today, there is important market insights and intelligence that we can derive of consumer and individual behaviors in South Africa with regards to whether it be getting additional capital, or whether with regards to transportation and the movement of people in South Africa and so on and so forth, that we can use in economic planning, in spatial planning of our South African communities, in integrating our South African communities and so on and so forth. And quite correctly, I don't think that it's being used effectively enough to be able to drive the developmental agenda of the South African economy.
Yeah.
There's a huge opportunity that is being missed with the data that is readily available, because South Africans are mobile. People in advertising will tell you that if you are, for instance, developing a website, make sure that it is mobile friendly, because that's where most people will access it. those opportunities that are available. And if we're not using them efficiently, then I don't think we'll be able to intelligently ensure that we address the developmental challenges that we have in South Africa today. And there's a huge opportunity that lies in the young. When I address business seminars or have engagements with young people, I always come across young people who have ingenuity, who have this new innovation that they want to implement and so on and so forth, but the environment is not conducive enough. The policy environment is not conducive enough. The financing product do not speak to the business or needs that young people have. But in closing, there is a scholar in the U.S. from the University of Columbia who came up with from her research, she found that the backbone of why she asked the question, why is it that the U.S. Is a proponent of all of these huge tech companies and all of these innovative companies? You talk about Facebook, you talk about all of these other or Google or whatever the case may be, all of these other innovations that come from the U.S., why is that the case? Essentially, what she found in her research is that a lot of these innovations were as a result of government grants and government financing. Why that is important is simply because government has patient capital. So they are able to invest in a specific innovations, for instance, GPS, touchscreen and all of those things, which are now innovations that we use today in our day-to-day lives, as a result of universities that dedicated grants towards research in those areas. GPS was an innovation of the army in the U.S., which was an investment by the U.S. government they call it DERPA, defense something in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So they have the patient capital to invest in all of these innovations, as opposed to the private sector. The private sector would want to invest in this thing and see the returns, whereas in government, they can invest in this thing and, in effect, lose money. But in the long term, the kind of innovations that would come out of those investments would leapfrog South Africa's productivity and growth in the medium and in the long term. But I think in South Africa, even with the taxpayers' money or with the public's money, we are overly cautious to know we can't invest in that innovation because it's too risky. But take that risk because you're a government and you have the patient capital to invest in that thing, and it has the best chance to succeed when it has your backing. But unless we have that change in paradigm, I don't think that we'll be able to leverage the fourth industrial revolution.
Dumiso, let's just final question, because there was something that Dumisani said which really unsettled me a bit, and I think I need a bit of a perspective, because Siyabonga brought in the issue of in the fourth industrial revolution and whether we think it's going to have an impact within the South African economy. And you gave a response to that. But then Brad Dumisani came on board and said he has traveled the nine provinces, and obviously he's experienced that the economic makeup is different from one province to the other. And he brought in the issue of a rural place. And he says he doesn't think the issue of the fourth industrial revolution features in rural areas because they are battling with bread and butter issues. So I'm just asking myself a question. Are we at that level where we will say rural people must not even be considered in terms of this revolution that is upon us? We should just focus on saying maybe work on grants to improve their decent living and so on and so forth. So I just want your take on that, because that's what Brad Dumisani mentioned.
It's important. Look, and then we need to look at it, I think, at a holistic level. Social grants or social welfare is important in the short term to ensure that people, at the very least, are able to survive. Mm. Recent reports found that this concept that we call black tax actually uplifts 2 million people not to live in poverty in South Africa. So by me, from the salary or whatever income that I'm able to earn, and being able to apportion a certain percentage of my salary towards my siblings or my family, assist them at least in not to be able to live in chronic poverty. So social welfare from government is important in that regard. But secondly, there's an important opportunity that you can leverage with the fourth industrial revolution. When you look at the innovation that we all know which was, although it didn't work in South Africa, but similar type innovations, that similar type fourth industrial innovations would be able to drive development in underdeveloped regions in South Africa, such as M-Pesa, that worked quite well in Kenya. Because Kenya saw that a large number of Kenyans use mobile phones for a wide range of things, then the innovation with regards to M-Pesa was designed to say people who cannot afford to have bank accounts can be able to send money home if they work in the agricultural sector or wherever they might be located at, I think, there's 1 cent. Which was the fee that was charged if you send money via M-Pesa, which is something that shot off in Kenya, and it's now been it's now an innovation that is being sent to more advanced economies around the world. In South Africa, similar situation, and that's why you find in South Africa, Capitec shot up and experienced the growth that they did because they targeted a sector, a low income and a low and middle income sector or consumers that were unbanked and that conventional banks did not want to spend their money or time in servicing because they are supposedly don't have enough money to be able to have bank accounts. And Capitec leveraged on that. They even mentioned recently that even people who earn 40,000 rands a month are now migrating from other commercial banks to Capitec because of the low banking fees that they have to offer and their structuring of their product range. And so that speaks to the kind of potential that exists in harnessing or directing innovations and development in regions that are underdeveloped in rural areas in South Africa to be able to broaden participation in the South African economy. And we need to be very deliberate about that. We need to ensure that government comes to the party. We need to ensure that the private sector comes into the party, specifically from the data aspect, to be able to inform policymaking at local government level and to ensure that the initiatives or the programs that are being driven on the ground are enhanced some of the output in data that is being derived, but also the governance and implementation of these programs are also implemented to the key, because that's also another aspect to say, yes, there's all of this fine and intelligent data that is available. We have this all of this great policy formulation that we have in place, but where are we getting it wrong in the implementation and in the governance and the management of these programs? So we would need to ensure that we have a look at it through that specific lens, but importantly, that we are deliberate about it. We need to ensure that we integrate communities from a special perspective, and also see how we leverage this big data and systems analytics to inform development in South African rural communities.
Dumiso Radebe, independent economist, we thank you very much for joining us this morning and for giving us an extra 8 minutes of your time. This is 24-hour economy on the road, isn't it?
No, indeed, indeed. And hey, let's not sleep, but let's continue to drive to this specific 24-hour economy.
Exactly. Thank you very much, my friend. Much appreciated, okay?
Thank you so much, my good sir.
Okay, that's Ndumiso Radebe, the independent economist. Power 98.7. Now, we're talking.